Hello, welcome to our podcast. This is a follow-up podcast to our podcast last week about deconstructionism and logocentrism theory. So today we're going to kind of work on deconstructing Alone by Edgar Allan Poe. And first introductions, Donovan Burley.
Liam Brooks.
Drew Meineke.
I'll read the poem here. From childhood's hour, I have not seen, as others were, I have not, from childhood's hour, I have not been, as others were, I have not seen, as others saw, I could not bring, my passions from a common spring, from the same source I have not taken, my sorrow I could not awaken, my heart to joy at the same time, tone, and all I loved alone. Then, in my childhood, in the dawn of a most stormy life was drawn, of every depth of good and ill, the mystery which binds me still, from the torment or the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tint of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm and the cloud that took the form of a demon in my view. So I kind of butchered the poem, but there's the poem. When I read it dramatically earlier, it sounded better, but it's okay.
So rather than taking a new critical approach where we're looking for the meanings and how the meanings make up the poem, we're going to deconstruct it. And what we're going to do is we're going to look for areas in the text. Well, deconstructist theories state that, you know, the text there are a bunch of conflicts and contradictions between the individual signifiers. And it's actually more of a way of reading rather than of like applying a theory, but we're just gonna show how the text like unravels itself. Like instead of like new critics say the text is built upon meaning, well, deconstructists say no, that's not the case. It's a bunch of, you know, arbitrary signifiers that you can pull apart that all have like a certain baggage, as Mr. Chisnell said. And so we're just gonna just focus on, especially we're gonna look at some like binary oppositions and see how those can be, how those interact, you know.
And especially with this kind of tone of poem, we're gonna go with I was looking at doing a Sir Philip Sidney poem, but I think this poem, just with all its imagery and, you know, it's just loaded with things to, you know,
there's
break apart and look.
Opposition, imagery, all that good stuff. So a very volume's a little bit low. All right, there we go. So very quickly, just a little brief overview of the poem. It's kind of just saying that the speaker is, he didn't have exactly the best childhood ever. He saw things differently than his peers. He liked and disliked different things probably, and he probably just didn't have a, was a little bit alone, as the title might state. So, and he's also kind of tranced by this mystery in the last half of the poem, when the, you know, the torrent, the fountain, cliff, mountain, and the sun. So still gotta, but let's, that's all right, that's kind of an overview of the poem. So now we gotta go into deconstructing it. So
yeah, so
we'll look for like some keywords first. Let's try to identify some like binary oppositions. Like, for example, I saw the torrent and the fountain. Right there, the torrent is like uncontrollable water, whereas the fountain is, it's controlled, it's man-made, it's put, you know, you're controlling the ever-changing nature of the water, you know. That's one I saw. So if we look at that, we can look at the words themselves. You know, what signifiers can we attach to those words? Like torrent, like uncontrollable, you know, ever-changing, fountain, controlled. You could also say, but you could also reverse that and say, well, the torrent is actually good because it's not chained down like the fountain.
It's, you know, natural.
It's natural. And so you could talk about – there are some other things too. Or do you guys identify any other specific signifiers that could be reversed? You know, how we can see how then this text can unravel because there are so many meanings attached to the words that we give them. You know, there are an infinite amount of meanings if we take it that way.
Yeah. If we look at just, I mean, right off the get-go, he starts with these, you know, opposite statements. I have not been as others were. I have not seen as others saw. I could not bring. So immediately there's a lot of, I don't want to say, there's a lot of comparison. And, you know, you take being, and that's kind of like, you could, there's a bunch of ways you could go with it, but I think in this case it's, you know, what is considered normal behavior, you know. So I think this is, you know, kind of lost my train of thought.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, there's that commonality, like, I have not been as others were. But the thing about it is, like, you could also put, like, if he's not like other people, then he must be just totally out of the water, like, crazy. Yeah. Or just, so there are other, you can attach the signifier, like unnatural, too. Because this is kind of like, this is kind of like a confessional poem. So the so you can see how it brings a personal aspect to it. And so when you identify the signifiers, like immediately the speaker is biased probably toward himself. So you can identify the words that have – you can understand, like, delve into the underlying words rather than just, like, the superficial. You know, like,
yeah.
I have not seen, like, seen, that's a key word.
That's from his perspective.
That's from his perspective. I could not bring my passions from a common spring. That's like, I mean.
And I think we have to, you know, pay attention that this is a, what, logocentrism? It's a metaphysical manifestation of the reader's thought. Onto actually speech onto paper. So I think that's why we need to, you know, pay attention to the confessional nature of it. Because it's not something, it's not like a universal aspect. You know, there's people that can, you know, relate to it. Yeah. But if we look into what the signifiers are signifying, and the, you know, ideas surrounded with them, definitely gain a deeper understanding, I think. Or maybe a different understanding.
What I kind of wanted to look at was around the last couple lines of the poem. There was a line you skipped, Donovan, but that's because it's technically in parentheses in all forms of the poem.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I
yeah,
should have.
Yeah, so a little bit of imagery of like a thunder, and it says, when the rest of heaven was blue, and there's also like a big thunder, a storm in there, and then there's a demon in the view. So that's kind of also like another little opposition thing there.
When everything was good, I could, you know, I was seeing bad things.
Yeah, and then there's just this one kind of very bad-looking thing that's just very scary looking, but then, you know, everything around it is just kind of looks really good.
And if we look at the, you know, signifiers associated with heaven, we have salvation, purity, you know, freed from, you know, the ailments of the common world. And then we look at demon usually associated with, you know, hell, damnation, you know,
corruption,
suffering, corruption. And I think an aspect of this is kind of taking a look at, you know, heaven being blue. Blue is a neutral, generally neutral color, calming. I think it's a lot of, it can be, you know, be the blues, but I think blue can also be, you know, viewed positively.
Definitely, I think he's, like, referring to the sky, because I'm sorry, I'm just going to tap into some new critics. I think heaven means the sky because the rest of the sky was blue. So if we come back to structural, or no, not, sorry, deconstruction. Blue, there are so many meanings attached to blue. When you say blue and he's referring to the sky, it's like, in that case, it's supposed to, well, quote unquote, supposed to mean, you know, like clear, like a heavenly color. Yeah. But blue can also mean you're down in the dumps as well, you know, so you can just see how quick that signifiers can change meaning because of how, then again, like, arbitrary they are. You know, like, I can say, like, I can call this table right here a Donovan, you know, just, you should be like, I can call it whatever I want, you know. Yeah. Like, so
I think this kind of goes back to, like, our talk of transcendental signifiers, or whatever that they were called, because
yep.
It's, we said that, well, transcendental signifiers are just like signifiers that are like, are the same and kind of like all reality speech
they
language.
They transcend any single signifier.
Yeah, that. So, and we said that's only theoretically possible because, you know, all these signifiers have so many different meanings, like we kind of just discussed with heaven and blue or whatever. And so there's a lot of, so that's why it's very hard to just like go from like speech to actually the language on the, in this poem, because it's just, there's so many different ways we can interpret it, and it's kind of impossible to know what the author could have really meant, and I don't know if we really should look at it from that angle.
Or does it mean anything? Because it's his exterior thought, so it doesn't, if we really look at this, it doesn't mean anything, but I kind of want to bring back, well, you, go ahead, Drew.
What? Now that we don't have to follow like the new critic approach, we can kind of go historicist slash romantic a little bit. I'm not going to delve into that too much. But Poe, I know he was not super appreciated in his time, right? And was he a romanticist, do you think? I mean, it kind of sounds like
yeah,
he was,
with his like El Dorado poem,
yeah,
The Raven, you know, they're not.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, this isn't modernism quite yet. This is
I did read a little bit into the history of this. He wrote this when he was like 20, 21, but it just wasn't released until like after he died.
It makes sense. This is probably like immediately you can tell this is like rebellion. It almost, I don't want to say spiteful, but indignant perhaps. So when you take that, you're, and deconstruction, I think you're allowed to take some of that, some outside external sources into this a little bit to uncover the blemishes and the perversions of the signifiers.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be the reader's, a representation of the reader's presence, and it makes up for the absence of his, of the speaker's, not readers, excuse me, the speaker's, absence. It's making up for it. It's a representation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can definitely look at this a bunch of ways. I mean, you look at a historicism, you know, Edgar Allan Poe probably not didn't have the best childhood. You know, this can be like the confession of that. You look at it like psychology, it's like Freud, you realize, like, try to figure out how a child can develop some feelings like these, or you look at it like we're looking at it now.
Yeah, I think to kind of focus back into the poem, there's kind of this reputation of Stormy, you know, always being brought up, you know, then in the in my childhood and the dawn of a most stormy life was drawn. We look at from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm, and then the cloud took the form. So I think Stormy, although has, you know, connotations of being, or excuse me, signifiers of being, you know, a great act of, you know, you could look at it from like a great act of a god or something, you know, loud, violent. There's also the aspect that, you know, storm brings rain brings life. There's that aspect of it that's typically not looked at. And you look at, you know, and the cloud that took the form when the rest of heaven was blue, I think that's important to see, especially with the other signifier of, you know, that bringing life and new things and whatnot.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's really interesting how, like, you would think that, like, new critics say, well, there's, well, of course you can derive the meaning from the text, but then Derrida's like, what are you talking about? Like, there are all these meanings attached that how can you find this quote-unquote meaning? You know, I totally agree with the storm. You know, the storm brings death, but it also brings life, you know, especially, I looked at mystery, you know, that's, like, that's, you're not sure, or maybe afraid of, like, bad tidings to come, you know, but I mean, from a religious standpoint, you guys ever heard of the holy, the mysteries of, I don't know, the great mysteries, holy mysteries. I think one was like Jesus ascending to heaven. That's like, and that's associated with the divine, the sacred, the good, you know. And so that totally is opposite. That's in binary opposition to the mystery that's on the page, you know, when you can, and I can, this is deconstruction, I can just grab any signifier I want and that applies to that word and attach it, and then it just, completely. The poem goes to, you know, yeah.
It just becomes meaningless, almost. Yeah.
And I mean, especially, this is always, I mean, in the second, Arnold meets versus Derrida video, there's the, you know, subject brought up that this is Mr. Chisnell's, you know, this is his focus of what deconstruction is. This isn't, this is that perspective. This is the perspective. This is the exterior thought and speech of Chisnell put into the video. So is it really, you know, reality? Well, no, it's technically none of it. You know, I could totally see deconstructionism as, you know, cutting the poem and taking the words apart. That's how liberal you can be with the theory.
Yeah, I agree. There's like, I think one of the like most prominent points that Derrida makes is like, if you try to take everything out, if you try to look for everything and try to look for the integrity of the word, you end up just taking everything out. Or that might have been what Chisnell said. So that's another external factor so we got to consider.
So I guess to kind of bring it focused back into the whole deconstructionism aspect of this poem, you know, if we're going to work on deconstructing the poem, why?
Oh, why even deconstruct it? What's the point?
I'm just being...
Well, the point is you gave us the poem to deconstruct, all right? We decided to do a podcast, and then you just gave us the poem, and we said, hey, let's deconstruct it, all right? But, I mean, that's still not exactly like... I guess there's still a bigger existential question to why we can do it.
I mean, this is the perspective of a bunch of three high schoolers in a podcast room. Looking at this, attaching signifiers to the different meanings. It's the exterior. It's the exterior of our thought because it's the speech.
Mm-hmm.
So although this does produce more of a presence, than language does, because that's the exterior of speech.
I mean, technically, our speech doesn't really, like, I mean, in theory, like, we're adding stuff to it, but the things that come out of our mouth, like, aren't on the page, you know? So it's, like, really, so is none of it real? Just, like, if it's exterior and if it comes from our minds and it's coming out of our mouths to describe something that's on the page, I mean, wow, that, how crazy is that? Like, Donovan, oh, okay. Yeah. All right, let's get back into the poem. We'll we'll discuss some existential and deconstruction questions later. I want to look at some more signifiers, see, like spring. My passions come from a common spring. That's
bouncy spring.
Bouncy spring.
Season spring.
I think in this case, he's talking about, like, the water spring.
Yeah.
An actual place.
Yeah. But then again, like, Donovan, immediately you added the spring, like the bouncy one. I would have added, the springtime, the life coming from it. Now, I guess you could, you could put in except for, like, the spring, like the bouncy spring, doesn't make any sense.
I was just kind of saying that.
But that's relevant because...
Bouncy spring back to life, like, you know, spring back from something.
But at this time, I don't know, like, at the time, and I'm going to delve into some historicism again because I'm allowed to this time.
Yes,
we are.
I don't know if that... People would have been like, okay, that's definitely not. But today's readers... You have a little kid read this poem, maybe they'll be like, oh, a spring, like a bouncy spring, you know? And then, oh, but that brings in psychology. Okay. Now, but that could potentially, like, divert the meaning somewhere else, or the quote-unquote meaning again. Oh, my gosh.
Totally.
Wow.
And you look at, you know, signifiers with spring, you have, we'll say a water spring. We have, you know, bringing of fresh water from a water supply. So the passions from a common spring, you know, that, you know, we look at spring and then we have to put in what's the source of the spring, what is it feeding into. There's so many ways to go with it.
Adding on, like, the next line, source. I find it interesting because immediately I think of, like, today, like good is like journalism or like,
oh, totally.
Or just like the news and everything immediately. And then when I add that, then there's other connotations to that as well. So they're like, that's crazy. Like, it's kind of, I want to say ironic because if there's like a No,
I like, it's like, I like the irony, though.
Well, but it's like, it's like this poem, like, can branch off into different meanings, and so can, like, almost
Mary
into like
Mary had a little lamb.
What?
Mary had a little lamb.
I don't think ironic was the right word, because I was going to take, like, this, it's like a hierarchy of meanings, and then make it a hierarchy of signifiers, but then again... If there is such a transcendental signifier, then that would work. But since there's not, I'm going to say I don't think there is, then that wouldn't make sense because, like it would still be a branching off structure of all these signifiers attaching from the word, and you just add a word, and then from your mind it just branches off. Like, I could – source, news, like journalism. Oh, today it's really bad. BuzzFeed, bad. You know, keep going on and on.
Yeah.
And – I can find things that just – it makes – I mean,
think
it,
about
that,
like,
would make sense in this because, like, it's almost like the common spring is the bad guy. But what if it's a good source? You know, what if it's a source full of vigor and truth? And you could – so that would refute that too. So it's
– I mean, this is like – here's an example of how far you can take things. You could take Mary Had a Little Lamb – and Mary could be a Satanist, white nationalist who sacrifices white lambs in the name of, you know, neo-Nazism. That's like, that's where you can take things if you take the connotations, you know. Mary had a little lamb, look at lamb, see what you can do with lamb.
But then you can also like, but then it can also be like Mary, like Mother Jesus, and then lamb, like Lamb of God. I'm sorry. I'm just attaching because it's what I know. I went to a Catholic school, so it's.
No, of course, yeah.
But that adds good connotations.
Mm-hmm.
Signifiers. You know.
Signifiers, yep. There we
go. You know, I think, wow. You know, instead of just connotations, sorry, this is just a divergence real quick.
Of course.
Just instead of instead of connotations, we should just say signifiers, like for everything.
Totally.
Because I don't know if they're like synonyms or like even close, but that's just
I think it's a better description. It's like,
yeah.
Because it's really a connotation is something you associate with signifying. It's really, you know, it's doing something up in the brain. It's not.
Yeah, because connotations is like, oh, I feel that this is.
You react to
like
the word.
You react. Well, a signifier, you're like, boom, boom, boom. All these words attached to this as well. You know, but anyway, I digress.
At the end of the day, it's almost like a big paradox that we can just do all these things to just this one tiny signified, and then it's just. We can go down these big rabbit holes that can lead to just existential questions and all that. But I mean, just going back to the poem real quick. I mean, it just talks about you know,
over
just
time, but that's okay.
That's fine.
Closing point.
The poem. It's just about. I mean, you know, the childhood. The speaker didn't have a best childhood, but he's kind of tranced by this mystery. So, and then I guess through deconstruction, we can go really far in depth about what that mystery could be and what exactly kind of made the childhood bad or something like that, I guess.
Deconstructionism is a monster of a theory. Of course, we got a little scattered here because, I mean,
We can go down all these rabbit holes. It's just really messed up.
You know,
it's fun talking about kind of.
Yeah, but to kind of bring it to a close, you know, this being the exterior thought, exterior speech of Edgar Allan Poe, and how many signifiers we can attach to it.
To each like individual word, even too. Yeah.
To be very deconstructionist about it. This poem means nothing.
Yeah. Just when you unravel everything and you expose every shortcoming that each word has, there's nothing left.
Then it just, man. And then it goes to.
Thank you, Derrida, for just.
And then it just goes to existential. Then it leads to existential questions about what the hell life means. Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
That's okay. All right.
I think we're done here, though.
That is our podcast, Donovan Burley.
Liam Brooks.
Drew Meineke.
All right.
Signing off.